Thank you. We move on to page 111, nominations to GAROC. The Mayor's willing to put himself forward if anyone wants to nominate him. Over to you, Councillor Crossland.
I didn't think anyone was going to nominate, so I'll take that nomination and I'll put that forward.
Is that seconded? Councillor Schilling? Any opposition? Then I'll put that to the vote. All those in favour? All those against? Carried by majority. I'll just check with Ms McKenzie. Should I have left the room?
Through the Chair, at this stage it's just a nomination, so there's no pecuniary interest at this point. At such point, if they're, when the ballot papers come back and Council decides on which way they want to vote, then I think you could potentially declare a conflict and leave then.
I'll take your advice, Ms McKenzie. Thank you. Councillors, page 134. Community indicators for the strategic plan. Who would like to move that we adopt those? Councillor Schilling, anything to add? Councillor Telfer, seconding. Anything to add? Then anyone against? Or we've got speaking against, Councillor Pryor.
Yeah, just cautiously speaking against. I agree with the concept. I think it's a great idea. The first community indicator for me has real alarm bells, and that's where we start setting a dwellings per hectare target for council, which I really, really violently oppose. I don't think that's our business. I think that's the state government business. Dwellings per hectare doesn't necessarily address housing diversity. It certainly addresses block size, but it doesn't address housing diversity, because what we've noticed through Oaklands Park is that yes, we have a lot of small blocks, but all we get are smaller three-bedroom townhouses. It doesn't address the key outcome of choice of housing and different populations wanting different styles of housing. All it is making smaller three-bedroom townhouses. So I really have a problem with that being in the document.
I'll just say one thing, Councillor Pryor. You did mention targets, but they are presented as indicators only, so the environment within which we work. However, that doesn't detract from.
But do we actively promote the environment which we work? I mean, we actively work towards that as a goal, which seems like a target to me.
Well, I think the goals or targets can really be drawn from the strategic plan or the business plan underneath that. But would management like to comment? How are these indicators viewed?
Thank you, and through the Chair. The intention of this document and the development of these indicators, so you could probably take this comment generally through the whole list, is exactly as the term intends. It's an indicator. This isn't a measure against which Council would look at its performance. It's not also responsible for the delivery of all of these. It's environmental indicators that we would look at. It's why it's periodic in its review, and see whether some of the trends across the city in some key areas. Siri just turned on, my apologies. to see if things are tracking across directions with some indicators that we've set, and therefore whether it beggars the question for Council to look at policies or programs or investments or initiatives to address what we're seeing through the indicators.
Anyone else speaking in favour? Question, Councillor Hull.
In terms of this really important document, this is the basis, foundation for everything we do. In the whole lot, and in particular under valuing nature, there's no mention of climate change, adaptation, mitigation, or even action. Is that correct?
Councillor Hull, what we were just discussing and what's stated in the report is that these are not action plans, they're not targets, they are indicators, and the sorts of things you're talking about are in the, or if you wish, if council wishes them to be, in the strategic plan or the business plan. So it's a different fish that you're looking at.
But surely there'd be some mention of those headers,
well,
without going into detail.
To the extent that the indicators should be varied, that's why this document came to council, I think, a few months ago. And then, of course, it's come up in the draft agenda should anyone wish to add or subtract any indicators.
I take your point. I apologise for not picking up on this earlier, but it's you've answered the question. Thank you.
Councillor Valescu.
It is on here?
That's correct, but Councillor Hull has different sort of topics in mind. All I can say is that between the first iteration and this one, I took the opportunity to meet with staff to discuss the indicators. Every single member had the opportunity to do that, because if you recall, it was bowled up to council. There were a few question marks about the indicators that were chosen and the way they were expressed. So as part of a healthy process, it was left to lay on the table for a while so elected members could contribute their feedback. We could do that again if you wish, but I imagine staff would find that frustrating. Now, it's been spoken for and against. Are there any more contributions? Then I'll put it to the vote. All those in favour? All those against? Carried by majority. Thank you. Now we move to page 130. Whoa. We jump a bit because we've dealt with the Seacliff, dealt with the Seacliff Park Residential DPA. Page 393, Joy Baluk Award nomination. Anyone to move? Councillor Telfer. A personal explanation before departing? Yes?
It has never occurred to me that my name would come forward, because Joy Baluk, I know, is a very feisty mayor, and I know many mayors and local councillors around South Australia that are worthy. So my role modelling as a councillor is
about social cohesion, about building social groups within our society. And my diligence in all the planning and pushing in land and infrastructure for licences is the dream that when we've got our staff in place that we'll actually see those come to fruition. And my listening by attending lots of events in the community and encouraging members to put their names forward to awards and other things, and also my belief that it matters what's in front of your street and garden, they are all important to me. So I'm going to leave for probity.
Thank you, Councillor Telfer, for your personal explanation. Since you're leaving, we'll note that down as a perceived conflict of interest, although there's no pecuniary benefit attached to the award. Members can see the criteria on page 396. Feistiness isn't in there, but I think the qualities that Councillor Telfer has expressed and demonstrated over the years probably fit that set of criteria pretty well. Would anyone like to move that? Councillor Valescu?
Yeah, look, I think we need to look at the quiet achievers, and I think Raylene's one of those quiet achievers. She does the work, she's very considered, and she's very committed to the community, and is someone that is able to listen and take in the information, probably amongst the most, I think, in the people that I've seen in the chamber over the years, and that's really important. I think, you know, it shouldn't be someone that makes lots of noise. I think it's someone that delivers for the community, and I have no hesitation to support Raylene with this nomination. Or Councillor Telfer, sorry.
Is that seconded? Councillor Masika, wish to speak? Thank you. Any opposition? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. So you might invite Councillor Telford to come back in. Page 399, formal submission on the draft planning and design code. Now, I understand that there is a, since things are changing every week, a further draft of the submission, and we'll need to have that explained to us. Of course, I am extremely concerned about this excessive infill. I do not know how it got planning approval. I'm referring to the apostrophe in clause 2. That simply should not be there. But Mr. Della Coombs, would you explain to us the manifestation of the latest version of the proposed submission and how it has developed? Thanks.
With pleasure, Mayor. Thank you. Through the Chair, the apostrophe has already been removed, firstly. Secondly, the UPC, pardon me, the UPC had a special meeting last week where we discussed and agreed on some further changes to the consultation package that had previously been considered. Chiefly among those, essentially consolidating our knowledge to date, putting in council's express requirements for crossovers, which is directly from our civil team, among the smaller changes, among the bigger changes, reflecting a series of options for how to treat the Southern Hills area. The UPC essentially decided to keep the status quo for the areas in Hallett Cove, Shadow Park, Trot Park, and O'Halloran Hill, whilst incorporating the changes proposed to Merino, Seacliff Park, Seaview Downs, Seacombe Heights and Darlington as submitted to the Minister within the recent Housing Diversity DPA. Further to that, in a meeting with the Mayor today, we've made some slight amendments to the Morfettville Racecourse policy area, specifically mentioning some extra wording around why we think a separate zone or subzone is required for this area, specifically that the buildings and uses found within the racecourse are above and beyond what would typically be found in the recreation zone, which is what is currently proposed for it. And this will streamline the applications for what is generally anticipated to occur, horse-related activities, commercial buildings, and uses typically found within a racecourse, cafe, office, horse-related, you know, medical and training facilities, etc., which we don't think have been adequately covered. Further to that, we've, with the announcement on Friday that the government has indicated an extension to the implementation of the code. This isn't confirmed, of course, until they put it to Parliament. I believe there's a an act which currently describes its beginning on the 1st of July, so that needs to be changed before it's confirmed. However, this is quite a strong indication that the implementation will be delayed. However, the consultation has not been delayed, so that's still due on the 28th of February. And we've essentially changed that covering letter to reflect that, look, we acknowledge and support this proposed extension of time for the implementation of the code. However, we strongly suggest that the code needs to be revised, become fully operational online, given back to councils and community to analyse and comment on before further changes are eventually released. We believe we've put forward a date of 1st of January 2021. And that's it in a nutshell.
And if I could just try and sum up as Mayor, but also to pass on what I've heard from Mr. Clark about communications. First of all, really hard work from the planning team, intensely hard work, especially Mr. Della Coombs, Mr. Mel Hewish, Mr. Wright, who are with us this evening. The important thing, I think, is that although we've presented really good arguments to the Department of Planning, for which you can interchange Planning Commission, that there is a real problem in the way that there is no written assurance of any variation or improvement until after the consultation period closes. So the extension of 3 months by itself might allow training for implementation of the actual data entry and e-portal system, but it doesn't really change anything in relation to the content. In terms of the message that we're putting out to the community, understandably, because of the consultation we did in relation to the Housing Diversity DPA, it's a very strong submission to keep what we decided in relation to the DPA, both north and south of the city, which is restricting infill in the north while allowing some more development in the south. I'm pleased with the fact that in the submission, or a note in the submission, that we're providing lots of solutions to government. So we're not just being negative, we're not trying to knock it down, we're actually giving a lot of solutions. For example, the design, the extensive, explicit design attachment. So there is a, certainly it's debatable whether the PD code improves design, but we're actually giving examples of what can be done in that regard. And I'll also highlight on page 468 a proposed implementation timeline. And really a critical feature of that is not just an extension, but having a revised draft, because it's going to benefit not just Marion, but councils all over the place to know what hasn't been accepted in the, let's say, initial consultation phase. Because from there it's fine-tuning about, you know, what to do more work on and what to accept. It will be quite a challenge, I would suggest, for Marion and other councils if we get a final version from this without having been able to negotiate the wins which may or may have been gained so far. Questions, members?
Whilst I welcome the extension of time and in fact support that, I just wanted to ask the question about the inherent consequence of any delays with making a decision. And members, some members might remember 2 years ago, I tried to actually move a motion to have an embargo on new building developments because while we play around with all of this, developers have the opportunity to knock down homes and put up the density that we currently have, which is an aberration in terms of community expectations where I come from, at least. So,
clarify, Councillor Hull, so at the moment we've got the north of Seacombe Road, we've got the Housing Diversity DPA approved, so that's the current situation that I think you're talking about.
So that comes into force when?
It was in force in August. It was approved by the Minister. So we're commenting on the Planning and Design Code because it regresses not only to pre-DPA, but to a more dense form of infill than what we had before the DPA. So what we tried to improve and successfully did improve, this regresses before that. And I'm only talking about infill in the northern part of the city, leaving aside the south. It's quite separate.
So the question, where I was going with the question, I take your point, but the question is that while we don't have any direction from government, developers can still put in their applications and they have so many years to build substantially start the project.
Councillor Hull, because the tenor of the PD code as first published with a marginal reiteration in December is greater infill across the board, and leave aside the subtleties, but greater infill across the board. What you would expect from developers currently, and I have anecdotal evidence this is occurring, is that there's banking going on.
Exactly.
There will be lots, and if it went through as first published, come 1st of July or 1st of September, you would actually have a flood of applications that have been waiting because of the restrictions we put on infill successfully last August. So it's actually the reverse of the dynamic that you're putting in your question. Okay. So anyway, I'll let you finish and get to the point.
No, I think you actually answered my question. My concerns about the bank.
Any other questions? Councillor Telfer? Mr. Della Coombs, no real problem with that. So we haven't a motion yet, so that could be included in the motion. Other questions or any sort of points like that? Councillor Valescu?
I've just got a question about the urban design guidelines. On page 457 in attachment 3, there's a cross for a dwelling I am aware of where there's a single driveway, there's two double garages, I think, and then another piece of off-street parking. Now, I would see that as a model for alleviating the off-street issue. And it's got a cross next to it because of the street presentation. So if I could just have some comment on that, and then I have another one as well.
I suppose it's about the design issue more than anything, but Mr. Della Coombs, or if you want to ask anyone else up to assist, please go ahead.
Through the chair, thank you. Yes, that cross clearly is indicative of the street frontage. We would not support that. However, a configuration such as that with the traffic arrangements, if it had a better street presentation, would be considered.
All right.
I just think that the one in the tick, you're less likely going to get them to use the off-street parking because those garages might seem a little bit small to get into in the sort of cars that many people drive, but I get the point. The other one is on page 462, and there's a cross about the fence, which looks like it might be in the front of the property. I can understand it being a sight line issue, and there's two there with crosses, but I guess sometimes people don't want to see or be seen by people in their neighbourhood for very good reasons. So I just wanted a bit more clarity on that one.
I suppose you have to imagine a whole street full of 2 metre front fences and the visual amenity. But Mr. Della Coombs, what do you say?
Firstly, I'll just remind members this, thank you through the chair, this document has been approved by council in its current form. That particular dwelling presentation is not considered good urban design by any stretch, and it highlights the problem to us, which is still present in the planning system, in that the lack of landscaping that's available there isn't actually counted by policies in the Development Act, where replacing grass with pavers is not considered development. Sorry, if we're referring to the bottom of page 460, was I on the right?
Councillor Valescu.
62, the fences.
Apologies, Councillor Valescu. Thank you. Yes, that one I would suggest would be in relation to certain policy areas where we do anticipate a level of passive surveillance for the community and also, you know, views in and out of homes. There would be areas that would be better suited to people who wanted a bit of extra privacy. They may choose to locate there, but certainly the desired and anticipated street frontage does lend itself to a level of passive surveillance for both the resident and Walker's.
All right, Councillor Gard.
Two questions, Your Worship. One more specific, the other general. On page 405, or the bottom of 405, we speak of council seeking that the proposed general neighbourhood zone be replaced with the code suburban neighbourhood zone. And then towards the end of that paragraph, whilst incorporating the changes proposed to Merino, Seacliff Park, Seaview Downs, Seacombe Heights, Darlington, as submitted to the Minister within the recent housing DPA, in brackets, proposing that certain parts of the suburbs become foothills and seaside policy area 23, and other parts remain in hills policy area 11, but renamed to escarpment policy area. I just want to, having been at the halfway point of the Urban Planning Committee meeting the other night and then having to leave to the other meeting, I think the discussions were alive as to what, how we might treat or not treat the area of Merino. So this is through the chair to Mr. Delacombe, how we might treat the area of Merino south of Jervois Terrace, east of the railway line. And there was some point, I think, put by the Mayor at that meeting that we treat it, we give it definite measurement or configuration rather than nothing at all. But then that was about the point when I had to leave. So this is reading as if there is no change to what we put up in that regard. I just wanted a confirmation that is the case.
Let's take that one first. Mr. Jellicombs.
Through the chair, I might have to get our senior policy up here because I myself had to leave that meeting and attend the adjoining meeting. So. Yeah.
While Mr. Mulhurish is coming up, would someone like to move that we continue until this item is concluded? Councillor Pryor, seconded Councillor Valescu. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. Mr. Mulhurish, why don't you step in and help us out with that?
Chair, just trying to clarify the point that you made previously.
The question is, summarise for Councillor Gard, the treatment of Merino in our submission, is it perhaps you could clarify the intention, and it's referred to at the bottom of page 405 in the original agenda.
Through the chair, the Urban Planning Committee last week, it was decided that we would, if you like, retain the status quo that the development plan at the moment has, except for the area of those four particular suburbs just south of Seacombe Road, including Merino. That the areas of the lower lying would become part of the foothills and seaside policy area, and the steeper areas, as per the DPA that went through, would be retained in the hills policy area, which is to be renamed the escarpment.
Thank you, Mr. Mulhurish. I think the critical point was, in the submission, what you have there is a replication of what we sought in the DPA, which has not been approved to this point.
Yep.
Thank you. You have another one?
If I may make the point that is satisfactory to my requirements as ward councillor. More generally, I wondered if Mr. Delacombe, through the chair, could make any comment to us as to anything you might have picked up along the way, that I know it's delicate, as to the possibilities of general flexibility in regard to density, particularly in the northern half of the council. It's a huge issue.
Councillor Gard, can you just clarify what do you mean by flexibility?
Well, in terms of when the Planning and Design Code sweeps in, are we likely to experience a wave of inflexibility as to our particular needs in the intricacies of what we've coughed up from the City of Marion, or Do you sense that there will be a lot of room for discussion, negotiation, etc.?
Well, Mr. Della Coombs?
Thank you, Chair. I'll attempt an answer. I believe the new system is completely changing the way our planning development is assessed and basically implemented in South Australia. The system, if you read the SA Planning Portal website, is sprouted to provide greater certainty for developers. There are parts of the planning code which are stricter by the numbers, and those applications where those numbers apply at the moment, namely through the general neighbourhood zone, there is less of an assessment process. Council are forced to accept these applications that may be certified by a private certifier. However, those that do not meet the metrics, the numbers in that part of the assessment would fall into a performance assessed category, where council planners, council staff would then assess those sections only of the application. So the rest of the criteria that are deemed to satisfy are automatically taken as a given, and those individual pieces that do not meet are then assessed on their merit. The meetings we've had so far with staff is that there will be need to be learning and training development for our staff in terms of these performance criteria, because there is now less guidance, as we've pointed out, with some of the criteria that are being taken away from our current development plan. And so in both breaths, it's going to be easier and harder for those remaining portions. Does that answer your question?
Any other questions? If not, then let's move into motion. Councillor Crossland.
Thank you, Your Worship. I'd like to move the motion as printed, if by doing so it adopts the extra wording from Councillor Telfer.
Thank you. We have that on the screen.
And if I may speak.
Yes, please.
So just as a bit of a very short pre-see of what was discussed in the Urban Planning Committee meeting. The recommendation was to basically use all the community consultation that we received through the Housing Diversity Plan. Based on that information, that was what we used to make recommendations for that plan. By moving forward, that's the information we still have. It's very current, so it made sense to actually use that as our basis for our submission, and that's what we've recommended. Having said that, I want to make it clear that when we are doing media to promote the housing diversity consultation, as you've seen with emails from residents in Marino that believe we made the wrong decision for Marino and the whole suburb should be allowed to have more development, I would encourage those people that maybe didn't take part in the consultation when council reviewed the planning zoning that they do submit to the government, and maybe there'll be a majority that do want more development, and if that is the case, then I would support obviously the new majority.
Seconded, Councillor Pryor.
Just to add to what Councillor Crosland said, we as a council put ourselves in what I would consider to be a very good position to get back to the minister about this, and that's over the course of the last probably 5 years. The current staff have contributed amazingly to this over the last, or how long it's taken them, but there were some others who did contribute, and there's guys like Steve Hooper and Jason Catnar, Rhiannon Hardy and Rob Tockley, who have left council since, who also contributed to all the body of work, which means that we can go forward with our cap in our hand to the minister and say, hey, look, we know what we're doing here. We've assessed our suburbs. We've actually gone out to the community. We've consulted on what we want. We really are in a good position to inform you about what's best for our city. It's just up to the minister now as to whether he listens. So I congratulate all the people involved in this so far, and I think we've given ourselves as good a shot as we possibly could.
Any opposition? Then I'll put that to the vote. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. And I declare the meeting closed. Thank you.